Welcome to the Daily Objective, day 162 of the war in Israel. As you can see, this is more of a reality show episode rather than a Daily Objective because there's four of us. But we there are some things that require a division of labor. One of them is attempting to discuss a 5+ hour debate featuring some really unsavory characters, and that's putting it mildly. So we're going to talk about the debate on Lex Fridman's show about Israel. It was between Norman Finkelstein and some guy, and then Destiny and Benny Morris. So who, Daniel, the guy has
Moin
a name.
Rabbani.
All right. Yeah, we don't like to name trolls, although this guy, I guess, deserves it if we've... especially if we've mentioned his despicable partner. He actually, it's difficult to make one of those people look good. The way to do it is put them next to Norman Finkelstein. We said yesterday, I'll repeat this today. I don't know if any of you watched the whole thing, Mark. I know you watched most of it. Morgan, you watched all of it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, congratulations and commiserations. But yeah, I certainly didn't. Yeah, keep that in mind. And if it's really, really necessary, we can do a follow-up to this. I want to get everybody's initial thoughts from Morgan. I'm going to go to you last because you have the broadest scope of knowledge of this debate. Mark, your initial thoughts. This is, by the way, just before you get to them, this is normally, we like to say it's a family-friendly show. This episode might be the exception. If you don't want your kids learning any words that they might get detention for if they use at school, send them away for this one, and generally for anything Finkelstein-related. Mark.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it's a really important debate to have, but I don't think it's going to change anybody's mind on the issue. The camps are very clearly divided. They're divided more or less along the Rabbani, Finkelstein, and Destiny and Morris camps, and ne'er the twain shall they meet. Although I thought there were too many concessions on our side, on Destiny's side and Morris' side, far more concessions that I think would have nullified pretty much every argument Finkelstein came up with. So I don't think it would convince anybody. It's an important debate. If anything, to see how the pro-Palestinian faction discusses things. And there's a technique that they all use, whether they're the quote-unquote academic gurus like the Finkelsteins or they're the lowest social media troll. And the common technique is to decontextualize pretty much any fact, separate it from its context, display it as if it is a foundational principle of the Israeli people and the Israeli government, and then use that as an excuse to rationalize Palestinian violence. They do it throughout the conversation. Destiny does a fairly decent job sometimes at calling them out when they're decontextualizing the facts. One of the most important things I thought he called out was statements that were taken in the International Court of Justice by the South African government to make a quote for a plausible case for Israeli genocide. When Destiny actually delved into the full context of the quotes, it completely changed the meaning. And I think that's very important, a very important bit of information for people out there to know who tend to put their trust in international institutions to actually get to justice of some kind or to mitigate the effects of war. I thought that was an important point to make, even though most of the arguments were irrelevant, especially from an objectivist perspective, given the nature of the conflict. So, I mean, I personally wanted to choke Finkelstein multiple times, because when he got frustrated and called out on his contradictions, he tended to use ad hominem attacks against the only non-academic there. So he pulled the academic card. I know more than you. I read more than you. That's a punchable offense. I think I would take his larynx and tear it out of his throat for that. Sorry, anybody listening. The other guy was more measured, but also condescending. It was a despicable debate, necessary to have, but really hard to watch. I watched it for 3.5 of the 5 hours. It's 3.5 hours I can't get back, but there were things I learned. mostly not to debate people who don't care about facts.
Yeah, I just want to say the Ayn Rand Center UK does not endorse violence. Not only that, we would, if even though we operate on a shoestring budget, we will purchase a one-way ticket for Norman Finkelstein if he wants to go join his brothers in arms in Gaza. Premium economy, I'm afraid that's as high up we can go as we can go. There are some pro-Palestinians in the chat, and I actually want to comment on what some of them said at some point. Of course, we're not going to name them because, as we mentioned, Daniel, your initial thoughts on this debate.
Well, so I already had a lot of knowledge about this debate going in. I listen and watch a lot of Destiny. So he talked about this even basically, you know, it was recorded and it took like 2 weeks to basically be published. So he talked about it a lot on stream. So I already knew what I'm kind of going into. And so maybe just quick comments about everyone. Someone is mentioning in the chat that we are just saying Finkelstein is speaking slow as a, you know, we say that and then we can ignore all his comments. But the biggest thing is like with Finkelstein, he talks a lot despite being slow, but he never really says anything you could pin him down to. And he also never answers any question. I think there was one question about, and this was in the history part, so I'll just mention it now, where they Destiny asked, so they were discussing if there would be expulsions and if expulsions were a crucial part of Zionism or like a central part of Zionism. And so they were discussing this, and Destiny asked, well, let's say the war, the civil war didn't happen. Let's say there was no violence between Jews and Arabs, and there would be an Israel state, a Jewish state, which would be basically 50-50 of Jews and Arabs. Does Finkelstein or does the other side believe expulsions would happen? And then he went on like a 5-minute rant, and they never got back to the question. And this is like a clear question that could really be discussed, but whenever Finkelstein encounters such a question, he never actually answers it. Then just a couple of things about Muin Rabbani. So from what I understand, the debate became much very unhinged like later on, and I only got about 3 hours in, so I don't have the later part of the debate yet. I think he made some points that I was like, I've never heard about it before. It's going to be like, so I wrote it down and it's going to be interesting to like research more. I didn't get a chance yet. So I think in many ways I would give him credit for not being as unhinged as Finkelstein, but I basically believe in the same things. I mean, the craziest thing was the fact that they couldn't even say that at some point they were discussing the numbers of people who died on October 7th. They were discussing, okay, we agree on the 850 civilians. Both sides agreed on that. But so then Destiny asked, okay, do you think, how many of those do you think were killed by Hamas? And when he said Hamas, we mean Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Palestinians in general, just the Palestinian side. And the only thing the Palestinian side could agree on is like more than 50%. Not 80%, not 70%, not 95%, more than 50% were killed by the Palestinians. So they do believe like a sizable portion of the people who died on October 7th were killed by the IDF. And so something that I think Destiny mentioned later on the stream, on his own show, not on Lex Fridman, is the reason why they didn't want to commit to any such number is so they can go back, you know, to their people and saying, look, we didn't agree that we still believe many people were killed by the IDF. We don't believe that, you know, those deaths were caused by Hamas. So I commented on everyone but Benny Morris. I really found the historical part like really interesting. I don't think essentially it matters when we discuss today's conflict. I don't think even if the Palestinian side completely won the historical fight, I don't think it would change much about today's conflict. So I think that's why we're not going to focus on it much. But when it comes to like actually refuting the Palestinian side, I think Benny Morris did a good job But to a large extent, I don't have the historical knowledge to really, refute or stand behind either side, because I just don't know enough. So I'm relying on what they say and their back and forth.
Yeah, but
Morgan?
did you notice that one of the techniques that they like to use is once Vinnie Morse would refute what they were saying on the Palestinian side, they would simply repeat that same information over again as if Vinnie Morse had not refuted it. When he would refute it again, they'd simply repeat it one more time. That's what they do. That's their version of winning.
Morgan.
Yeah, I mean, just on that point, Finkelstein was barred basically at one point from quoting Benny Morris's books because he kept repeating quotes out of context. And Benny Morris would for you guys because you guys are lagging for me.
You're
You're
lagging a little
lagging.
bit. Maybe
Yeah,
turn off your
you are
camera.
lagging. We're lagging more than a little bit, which is a shame because you are the one person who saw the whole thing.
Wait, he might be back.
I think you're back now. Do you want to try again?
Sure, sorry, it's just said my connection's unstable. So Finkelstein was barred at one point from quoting Benny Morris's book because he kept repeating a certain quote out of context. And Benny Morris would address the quote, and then Finkelstein would just keep citing it back at him. And I mean, basically, my impression of the debate was that Destiny shouldn't really have been there. I don't want to be unfair to him because there were certain things that he said which were better for that side, but it was too easy, I think, for Finkelstein and for
Yeah.
the other guy
Morgan,
Lee.
we are losing you quite a bit. So if you want to maybe sign out
To
and come
basically
back
ridicule
in.
him and suggest that he should.
Okay,
Sorry.
I think I get what Morgan was trying to say. So basically that
Yeah, but I think that served our side, to be honest with you, because it exposed Finkelstein for a guy who really doesn't have any substance, and when he loses track of his talking points, when they're not sticking, when somebody's actually refuting them with counterpoints that he can't then dominate the conversation, he then becomes ad hominem. He then starts personally attacking the other person. That cannot work for the pro-Palestinian side. I mean, certainly there's some people in most of the pro-Palestinian side are Cretans. Who probably like that kind of thing and think Destiny has it coming to him. But for anybody with a brain watching it, who's on the fence, who doesn't really know much about the conflict, you can't help but be turned off by Finkelstein's approach.
I want to quickly thank our super chatters, then go to Morgan. Then I will tell you guys why I disagree with most of what you said. Thank you, Akira, for becoming a YouTube member once again. Thank you, Mary Aline, for the super chat. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Bonnie, for your super chats. Thank you, Wes, for the very generous super chat. To the person asking, are we pro-Ukraine? Of course we are. We support the civilized people who are fighting against savages wherever they are. That's why we support Israel, and that's why we support Ukraine. It's in a sense very much the same war, and of course it's more in more than a sense because Russia is a massive supporter of Hamas. Morgan.
I'm sorry about the internet issues, guys. What did you hear of what I said before?
We did get your first point.
Destiny shouldn't have been there.
Basically, yeah, because I think it was too easy for them to ridicule that he was there. Not that it was fair the way it was done, but basically, I think it would have been better if some of the other people who were on the list could have taken Destiny's spot. If Euron was there, I think Euron would have done a far better job. And I think Lex Fridman shouldn't have made it basically a popularity poll on Twitter as to who was participating in the debate. I thought Benny Morris was good on the historical points, but he often wouldn't do enough of the pardon press debating on of various points, or he wouldn't do it very well, which was where Destiny really picked up some of the slack, so good for him. Rabbani, I think, came across pretty well in the sense that he was kind of calm and measured, but a number of the implications he made, or just outright statements he made in terms of his judgment about Israel being in a genocidal apartheid state, I think was just abominable. And I mean, the Destiny's one really great moment was when Rabbani asked, "How can you have peace with this murderous, genocidal, apartheid government?" And Destiny said with her mask, "No, you can't have any peace." So that was pretty good. But and then Finkelstein was, took every opportunity to just kind of to just throw insults around as much as he wanted to. He deconceptualized quotes of Morris all the time. And so and he was really awful. And I think ultimately it was probably the mistake, at least at the sorry, the debate as it was held was basically a mistake. And I think that and so Lex Fridman should have done it differently. And I think that's unfortunately, someone coming into this who wasn't very sure about their perspective on it, I think unfortunately might come away from it leaning towards the Finkelstein side, not because they should, but just because I don't think Destiny or Morris put across a good enough case. And they didn't deal with the question of international law well enough. Benny Morris just kept saying, "Oh, no, who cares about the law?" But to someone who doesn't have a perspective on that, that's just going to sound like he's in favor of breaking laws. He didn't really address that question in a way that he should have done. So I think the pro-Israel side put across their case pretty poorly.
Yeah, so I completely agree with that. The first point I wanted to disagree with was Mark's point that this is an important debate to have. I think it's important not to legitimize people, especially like Finkelstein, by sharing a platform with him. And that's my first opposition to this issue. Now, what I really disagree, Morgan, is that Destiny shouldn't have been there. I think if you're gonna have that debate, which again you shouldn't. Destiny was the better one. Benny Morris was constantly apologetic, was agreeing with points. Yeah, I'm sure Israel, by the way, Destiny said this as well. I'm sure Israel at some point targeted civilians. If you're sure, give an example. Like deliberately targeted civilians. And of course that never came up. Again, just to remind everybody, I watched less of this debate than you guys did. But the point
That didn't come up with Israel deliberately targets civilians. Individual Israelis may have committed crimes for it was to make a distinction between the Israeli government's policy and Hamas's policy, which is, yeah, in every country, there's criminals in every sphere of human activity that do bad things. The difference is Israel tries to prosecute those people and put them behind bars, and Hamas gives their families pensions for life and puts their names on street corners.
so that's not how I understood it. Certainly not from Benny Morris. I think he again constantly was conceding points to the pro-terrorist side, and I think he did more damage than good. Now the reason Destiny should have been there is to expose this philosopher king mentality of Finkelstein of I'm a professor, I've written books, who are you? You just talk on the internet. And that's a good indication of where this person is coming from. We've spoken about how people are not pro-Palestinian, as a kind of compartmentalized point on which they side with evil and then everything else about them is great. No, he's a terrible human being in every imaginable way. And that comes across when the best this academic who has written books can come up with when talking to a lowly YouTuber is calling him a moron repeatedly. So, yeah, those are some of my initial thoughts.
And
Yeah, Mark.
Razi, that's where I think a conversation like this is important, because as much as I agree with you that to stand on the same stage with these scumbags is despicable, you also have to they have a great deal of influence with a wide audience, a wide audience of low IQ morons for sure, but those people have influence as well and they magnify their voice. The thing that these people cannot stand, as Finkelstein couldn't stand, when an autodidact was beating him at the debate, and he's a credentialed academic, and he just blow his mind. You have to expose these idiots, these vermin to the light of day. Nothing kills bacteria and viruses better than sunlight, and so we have this, in some respects. Get over the now. Do I wish Benny Morris was more? 90% of what they argued about was irrelevant, to be honest with you. But you know, and Benny Morris could have been a more vigorous advocate, and not even advocate, just more vigorous in pursuit of the facts and less apologetic about Israel. But still, I came away from that hating Finkelstein even more. I'd seen him in debates before. I'd never seen him go full spaz ad hominem and lose his shit. And I thought that was a very, very valuable thing to see.
Well, from the parts that I watched, the person I would personally want to debate was Benny Morris, because I think he gets things wrong. I would also love to debate Lex Fridman, of course. But yeah, I where's the line? Like, you sit across from a normal Norman Finkelstein. Would you sit across from an actual Hamas spokesperson, or, you know, one of the masterminds of October 7th?
No, I would not. I would not. To me, that's different. Political figures are different. I think because you give them legitimacy by sitting across from, like Tucker Carlson did with Putin, or if the president were to actually sit down personally with the president of North Korea, you are legitimizing their regime by bestowing your presence on them. But I don't think that's the case when you're having an intellectual argument and you're taking a thought leader for one side and exposing everything that he thinks to the light of day, to the light of reason, so that you can invalidate him in the eyes of the public. To me, that's a form of warfare. In the same way that the Israelis have to completely destroy Hamas, and that means not just the people who run Hamas, but the ideology. Here you're destroying the ideology. You're going to war with the ideology and completely destroying it in the eyes of their followers. So that it's like Bugliosi said when he's prosecuting a case, you have to spoon feed the jury to such a degree that they feel guilty if they vote that the person's innocent. And you have to destroy the ideological base, the Finkelsteins of the world, so thoroughly in the eyes of people that they have to know that they are lying if they accept his point of view.
By the way, on Tucker and Putin, I'm not sure who legitimized who during that debate, but I think there is a future episode of the Daily Objective, Mark, where it's you and me talking about where the line is when it comes to debates. Michelle says that Lex Fridman blocked her on Twitter. This is not the first person who blocked you on Twitter, Michelle, but we are happy to have you here and on Twitter with us. Mark, actually, Daniel, do you want to, if there are any other thoughts, either Mark, Daniel, or Morgan, before we go to actual clips?
So, since we're doing clips, most of my points are around clips. But there is, I also have clips for this. Oh, so something I would mention, although, yeah, something that should be brought up is, both Finkelstein and Rabbani, they talk about international law, you know, international law, international law. We have to abide by international law. So they really, you know, rely on international law until it disagrees with them, or until, I think this specifically happened with the, I'm not sure who it was. It might have been Lex who asked if Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. They said,
yeah, that was at the beginning of the October 7th part. Is that something we're going to play? Because if so, we can.
I'm not sure if the specific part I want to mention is that. So I'll just quickly mention it. Yeah, basically. So just to explain. And they explained it basically that Rabbani didn't want to say at the start that if he thinks it's a genocide, because genocide is like a specific term. It's decided by it's like a specific international law term, and it's decided by a specific organization. It's not something you can just point to and say this is it. And the case at the International Court of Justice said that there is what was the term that they used? That there is a plausible case for genocide. So they argued a little bit about plausible means, and I think Finkelstein very much like misunderstood what plausible means. He pretty much said it, the way he said it, it's more like 50% the fact that it's plausible. So yeah, both of them rely on international law. International law says it's just plausible, doesn't mean it is, but later both of them believed there is a genocide. Like, so that's just something I would mention.
So here's the thing that in the part that I saw didn't happen, and I think should happen in such a conversation. I'm going to read out the definition of genocide, because that kind of is an important part of discussing what is and what is not a genocide. So this
Where
is
is the
the actual
definition from?
definition. Sorry, what?
Where is the definition from?
Where is the definition from? Oxford Dictionary.
I'm not sure if we can go by that, because it's a specific like legal term, so it might be inappropriate to just take that, but give it and maybe I can.
All right, I'll read it and then you tell me what the issue would be with this definition. This is the definition according to the Oxford Dictionary: the deliberate killing of a large number of people from a particular nation or ethnic group with the aim of destroying that nation or group. So, you know, just before we go to what the legal issues might be, before we go to that, there is clearly a genocide happening, or an attempted genocide happening in this conflict, and Israel is trying to prevent it by taking military action against those committing it. And this is not a debatable point. So there's another reason why I would not sit across from somebody who says Israel is committing genocide and discuss whether or not that is the case. It is obviously not the case. It is the opposite of the case. It is what the people who Norman Finkelstein supports are trying to do. That is what genocide is. But Daniel, what is the issue?
I think it's mostly right. The actual like definition by international law is a bit longer. It has like specific things it is, but it's a good summary. I just think it's important to point out that there is a difference.
Yeah, and you know, that definition may evolve to fit whatever we are supposed to believe genocide is, or whatever genocide is supposedly happening. So, yeah. Any other thoughts, or should we play some clips?
Well, just before you do, although generally I think the pro-Israel side could have been a lot better, and I still do think someone better than Destiny could have been there. Although what Destiny did that was very good was he pointed out lots of the things which were really bad on the pro-Palestinian side, which people might have missed otherwise. So when he was pointing out Finkelstein's selectivity on certain things, I think that was very valuable, and I think people can see that here. I think you can see it elsewhere, but it comes across here in a way that I hope people notice. I think also what comes across from the pro-Palestinian side is when you see the justifications of what happened on October 7th, when Rabbani was saying that he refused to condemn it. He said, he had some phrase, I'd have to check my notes. He said something like that he wouldn't
elective
exactly...
condemnation, is that the phrase?
Well, there was that, but he said something like, I wouldn't not, in, he used like a double negative. It's like, I wouldn't not endorse it or something like that, but I won't condemn it, because people won't condemn all the violence against the Palestinians. I think people should look at that and really wonder why are these people finding it so hard to say all this kind of stuff. And that Finkelstein maintained that there was no evidence of sexual assault that's happened. And he even published on his Substack just a few days ago, a piece called Patton's Rape Fantasies, looking into, which is based on the report about the sexual violence which occurred. So I think people should just appreciate how sinister and nasty the pro-Palestinian case was that was put across.
Which clip, or should we just go in order?
Whichever one you want. We're gonna play a few, but again, this is not comprehensive enough. We wanted to do this in a timely manner, but as I mentioned, if there is an appetite for it, we can lose our appetites and watch some more of it and discuss it again.
So I don't have clips, I just have the whole video and timestamps. So if anyone will go for a bit and then I'll stop it.
Can you go? I sent you some timestamps. Can you go to the first of those?
Yeah. So this one is about Finkelstein talking slow. I'm not sure if we'll have a point around it, but...
I can't hear it.
Me neither.
Oh, okay. One second.
If you want to work on the issue with the audio, and we can talk about his, basically, you remember the point that he made. This was also in the intro about him talking slow because he puts value in his
I can play it now. Do we want to play it or?
Sure.
Okay.
Is being responsible for your words. Now, some people accuse me of speaking very slowly, and they're advised on YouTube to turn up the speed twice to three times whenever I'm on. One of the reasons I speak slowly is because I attach value to every word I say. And it is discomforting, disorienting, where you have a person who's produced a voluminous corpus, rich in insights and rich in archival sources, who seems to disown each and every word that you pluck from that corpus by claiming that it's either out of context or it's cherry picking. Words count.
Yeah, all right, we get it. So this goes to the point that for me, this is similar to the point that I made when he's you know, dismissing Destiny and calling him a moron. Finkelstein is a learned person. The rest of us are not. We need to listen to him. He needs to speak slowly because we're all morons. Yeah, he wrote books, so just listen, shut up, and agree. Any nicer thoughts on what he just said?
I would say words count, but they count within a context. And you dropping the context completely removes the meaning and intent of the word and makes them not count. So he's talking out of both sides of his mouth every time he speaks. And I actually think his slow speaking is a sort of tool. If you notice, that side monopolized a great deal of the conversation. They monopolize because they just go on and on and on and on, and the pro-Israel side lets them do it, while they don't allow them to complete sentences and interfere with them. Suddenly, Finkelstein can speak quickly when he has to interrupt Destiny from making a point, or he has to you know, take away their debating momentum in some way. So I think it's actually a tactic to just monopolize time.
Yeah,
I think.
Oh, go on, Morgan.
Well, I think that if we were to take what he said out of context or something, that there's value in speaking slowly and so on. And he came across reasonably clear in a way that, you know, he was having a go at Destiny for kind of being a motor mouth, and sometimes it was hard to pick up every word that Destiny was saying, but I think just a lot of what, because he repeated this point multiple times throughout the debate about I speak slowly because I attach value to my words. I think it just came across as pompous and pontificating, and I don't think it lended much to the debate, really.
Yeah, Finkelstein has a lot of good, you know, sound bites, and I think Destiny brought it up. He always says, you know, I only deal with facts, and, you know, I attach meaning to words, which, you know, it all sounds good. But he doesn't do it. It's basically the point. Like, he tries to, yeah, put himself forward as someone who is reasonable, someone who, you know, puts meanings into words, and someone who deals with facts. But when it actually goes deep into questions, he never actually does it.
Thank you, Garbled Words, for the super chat. Thank you, Kirk Wilcox, for the super chat. Kirk says, why don't you go read some Wikipedia, you motor mouth, which I believe is a line from the debate. Should we play another clip? Any other thoughts on this topic before we go to another clip from the debate?
Yeah, I thought Destiny did a very good job of calling him out on his hypocrisy. Words matter, except when they don't, when the facts, and facts matter, except when the facts don't go your way, except when the words are contextualized to actually show the context is exactly the opposite of what you say. I mean, he took Benny Morris's stuff out of context to attempt to prove that this concept of transfer was fundamental to the Zionist movement. So the idea of pushing the Palestinians off the land pre some of the struggle was actually is endemic in the Zionist movement. When in fact, all of those words, which were a tiny piece of a voluminous work, were with reference to a specific context, which was that the Arabs were attempting to destroy, or attempting to get hegemony themselves, which makes so much of the conversation. I want to get your input on this, Razi. It makes 4.5 to 4 hours and 45 minutes of this conversation utterly worthless, because the Arabs wanted hegemony. They wanted that land for themselves. They have no historical claim to it, but they wanted the land themselves. The Jews wanted the land for themselves. There were irreconcilable differences between the two, and there was a civil war. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the Arabs started the civil war, and once war happens, your claims are invalid. Whoever wins the war wins the claims, in my view. Particularly when the people who win it are the defenders, when they're people being assaulted and they're simply striving to live, which is exactly what was happening with the Jewish population over there in Palestine. So from the civil war in 47 all the way to the Arab attempt to murder all the Jews in 48, they were wars of attempted hegemony by the Arab people, and they lost. There was an olive branch thrown out by the UN, which was a two-state partition, which the Arabs outright rejected because they wanted full hegemony. So as far as I'm concerned, all their claims for land, for a state, are null and void after they lose that war. What say you?
Well, I was going to make this point earlier, and I don't remember if I did, but the whole issue of is expelling the population integral part of Zionism? Yes. The population, the Jewish population being expelled from Arab countries is an integral part of Zionism. Jews cannot live anywhere in the Arab world. Jews could not live in Europe until a few years before Israel was established, because they were, a genocide was committed against them. So in that sense, expelling populations is an integral part. And of course, the very existence of Israel is an attempt for a place, to have a place where Jews are allowed to live and aren't facing this kind of stuff, which they have faced, for all eternity, and are facing today in more and more places.
Agreed. And I thought the pro-Israel side did, now maybe because I'm privy to some of these issues, I thought they made a decent point in that respect. I thought they also contextualized the pro-Palestinian side attempting to demonstrate that Israel has placed an occupation and apartheid state on Palestine by saying apportioning sort of a second class citizenship to the Palestinians. They contextualized it by saying they were in a state of war. Now, who would let a traitor into their midst and admit them as citizens without some kind of restraints and controls? And it feels like that what they tried to cast as paranoia, or they tried to cast it as overreaction or militancy or some kind of tyranny on the part of Israel. That's exactly what happened on October 7th. The people that lived in those kibbutzes had incorporated the Palestinians into their lives, helped them, gave them money, took them to hospitals. They were really a charitable group of people towards the Palestinians. And those very same Palestinians were the ones who told them where the armories were, so that Hamas could go right to the armories, knowing that the citizen militias would go to the armories to try to defend themselves, and they could murder them there. So actually, putting military restraints on a hostile population is not unreasonable. And we can see now in October 7, 2023, that those very same people that Israel had accepted and taken in as part of their own world were the Judases in the room. So it wasn't an unreasonable thing. Follow me?
Yeah.
I think they did a good job at showing the lie, as showing that there's more than meets the eye to this pro-Palestinian side.
Well, we'll agree to disagree on that. Although again, I watched not that much of it, but what I watched, I was not impressed. But actually, on the point that somebody made here, I think it was Morgan, that Yaron should have been there. I don't know if Yaron would agree to debate Norman Finkelstein. I'm not sure I
I
would
think
actually want to see that.
I think Yaron said he wouldn't.
He would
Yeah,
not. He
he
would
said he
not,
would.
yeah. But would or would not?
Would not.
Yeah. All right. Well, I agree with that. And I don't know how enjoyable it would be to see. I mean, Yaron has debated some people who are out there, and some of them, I don't think it's also, I don't know how you sit in a room and debate somebody when all they do, like with Destiny, is call you a moron. Like, just by continuing
Here's
to
how you
talk to
do it.
them.
Here's how you do it, Rozzy. And right beforehand, you go, here's the deal, Finkelstein. If you start shouting at me, I'm going to punch you in the face.
ERC UK does not endorse any violence.
I mean, if you put
Woman.
it in a contract and it's like, people, we've had debates also about
I
mixed
don't think
martial
that's a
arts.
legitimate contract. You
Yeah,
take
put it
a
in a
waiver.
contract.
You have him sign a waiver that if he starts disrespecting you, you can pull him on the table and
There's those 7 words, right? Those 7 words that you're not allowed to say on American television. You can have a list of words. You say one of these, you get punched in the face. But anyway, next clip, Daniel.
So I think this is them commenting on October 7th, right at the start.
And we'll return to history, maybe 67 and other important moments, but let's look to today in the recent months, October 7th. Let me ask sort of a pointed question. Was October 7th attacks by Hamas on Israel genocidal? Was it an act of ethnic cleansing? Just so we lay out the moral calculus that we are engaged in. I don't, maybe you was,
The
sure.
problem with October 7th is this. The Hamas fighters who invaded southern Israel were sent, ordered to murder, rape, and do all the nasty things that they did. And they killed some 1,200 Israelis that day and abducted them, as we know, something like 250 civilian, mostly civilians, also some soldiers. Took them back to Gaza, dungeons in Gaza. But they were motivated not just by the words of their current leader in the Gaza Strip, but by their ideology, which is embedded in their charter from 1988, if I remember correctly. And that charter is genocidal. It says that the Jews must be eradicated basically from the land of Israel, from Palestine. The Jews are described.
Pause. I can't hear you.
I'm not sure there's actually much to say about this clip beyond what we said about genocide. I mean, I don't think we are gonna have many disagreements here on which side is genocidal.
Want to go
So
to next one?
if
Yeah,
any.
I think it's important. I think it's important to point it out for people who are out there watching this, and getting saturated by social media accusations that Israel is committing genocide because more people in Gaza have died than did in Israel. It's important to point out that Hamas had charters in its policy that were genocidal, that specifically and explicitly called for the annihilation of Jews. Now, the pro-Palestinian side are now trying to make that distinction that it's not Jews everywhere, it's just Zionists, it's just Israelis who are supposed to be all Zionists, which is not the case. But it's in their policy. It's
Yeah, I
not.
mean, the
It's
thing is,
not in Israeli policy.
this continued into, well, they revised the charter. No, they didn't. And all that is so irrelevant when you see their very recent actions. Like those actions, as the saying goes, speak louder than words. The words say the same thing, but the actions are undeniable, although some still attempt to deny them. So yeah, that's my
Rozzy,
point.
there's not a single piece of evidence out there that does not indicate that the Palestinian people and Hamas in particular, Palestinian people in general, are not saturated by an ideology of bigotry and hatred towards Jews, that they do not want them genocided. Most polls say that the overwhelming majority of Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza agree with the means and the ends of Hamas. That's a genocidal, murderous organization. Man in the street interviews basically say 100% of the man in the street interviews, there is no compromise between the Palestinian positions and the Jews. It's either from the river to the sea or nothing. And that is a genocidal attitude. Polls, man in the street interviews, the very political charters of Hamas all say the same thing.
Yeah, and one of the recent polls showed that there was, and I don't know if we have access to it right now, but if not, we might put it in the description later. There's anger among the Palestinians about Hamas's leadership in Qatar, but Yahya Sinwar, the mastermind of the October 7th attack, is much more popular now. He's basically the person they want leading them.
Ismail Haniyeh is much popular than Mahmoud Abbas.
Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah, Abbas, because Abbas, his people didn't act, which makes you think, you know, if Fatah really wants to be back in the leadership race, the actual leadership, not the people that the West think are a partner for peace, what they really need to do is an October 7th of their own, which I've said on this channel many, many times. I think if Israel doesn't take military action, more severe military action in Gaza than they're currently taking, and as severe an offensive in the West Bank, they will pay the price for that. It is much easier to attack from the West Bank, and that is just a question of time. I mean, there are terrorist attacks happening frequently coming from the West Bank. They're small enough that you don't hear about them unless you're following Israeli media, but they are happening several times a week, and those are the ones who, of course, are successful. And Israel, but this is not on the table. Any offensive in the West Bank is not on the table. Releasing the terrorists who are now committing these attacks is on the table. Next clip.
I had one of mine clips, but it's just a quote, so I might as well say it. At some point in the debate, they talk about, and I'm not sure how much we can talk about it, but basically they were talking about anti-Semitism, specifically anti-Semitism among the Palestinian people. And Finkelstein said something interesting. He said something like every non-Jew has a little bit of anti-Semitism in him. Anti-Semitism is a part of human condition. And that's are you muted, Mark? I can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that quote. He was trying to rationalize Palestinian anti-Semitism by saying anti-Semitism is a part of the human condition. He was saying that it's basically a worldwide phenomenon. You shouldn't just distill it all down to the Palestinians.
Yeah, I've heard that before. There's an interview that David Baddiel did with Miriam Margles, who's a British actress who is Jewish. And when you get a left-wing person trying to criticize Israel but condemn anti-Semitism, usually they'll make this kind of ridiculous idea that the reason why anti-Semitism has been so rife and prevalent throughout history is because it's just in the human condition to hate Jews. You know, it's just how it is. People just hate us.
But Morgan, doesn't that exactly... That should invalidate all of their arguments, because if anti-Semitism is such a deep part of the human condition, it's more of a reason why Jews need a place to live where they can legally defend themselves. It's like they don't see that there's every time they try to come up with an argument that excuses anti-Semitism somehow, or that somehow invalidates the Israeli state, they're actually confirming it. It's almost like an axiom. You understand?
Yeah, I mean... There's the worst pieces of shit in the world always get eventually to the point where their excuse is, you know, I was born like this. It's some sort of determinism. I didn't get to that part. I really feel like I missed out on a bunch of parts, interesting parts of this debate. But
don't you agree with me that that just confirms the fact that there needs to be an Israeli state, a Jewish state?
Well, depends on what you think should happen. I think Finkelstein has dedicated his life to making sure that the job that Hitler started is finished. In which case, it's better for that purpose if there is no Jewish state. But it's important also to point out.
But if Benny Morris, if if the pro-Palestinian side said, look, there's so many places in the world the Jews could have gone, why did they choose Palestine? And Benny Morris's point was there was no place in the world they could go. They were being pogromed out of basically every continent on earth. And they, even in the end, were prevented from entering Palestine by Arabs, British, but British pressured by the Arabs to restrain Jewish immigration. They couldn't go to England. They couldn't go to America. So literally, it makes more of a claim that if the world is so tuned in to this idea of anti-Semitism, then of course the Jews need a safe space where they can harbor, where they could live, where they could legally defend themselves, because the rest of the world is somehow wired against them. To me, it makes more of a case for Israel, not less.
It's also just a way of hand-waving away the anti-Semitism, because if it's in people's nature, then you don't have to account for the fact that the people you're defending would lynch you in the street.
That's true. It's a form of rationalizing their violence, but it also confirms the very reason for the existence of Israel.
Yeah, a couple of flaws in that. Of course, anti-Semitism is, you know, an idea. You have to adopt it. You have to think and get to that conclusion. So some go that route, some don't, some who are Jews and some who are not, because Finkelstein definitely qualifies, as an anti-Semite, even though he is a Jew. Mark, tomorrow you and I are talking about I think somebody else who qualifies as an anti-Semite, even though he's a Jew, the guy from the Oscars. So there are such people out there. So anyway, next clip. I'm glad we're coming to the end of this. No offense, guys. Just thinking about these people.
So the anti-Semitism is a part of human condition. It's 125:37, if anyone wants to see it for themselves. And so next one is going to be, are Palestinians justified in their actions?
Important almost from a legal perspective, but if we zoom out, the moral perspective, are Palestinians from Gaza justified in violent resistance?
Well, Palestinians have the right to resistance. That right includes the right to armed resistance. At the same time, armed resistance is subject to the laws of war. And there are very clear regulations that separate legitimate acts of armed resistance from acts of armed resistance that are not legitimate.
And the attacks of October 7th, where did they land for you?
There's been almost exclusive focus on the attacks on civilian population centers and the killings of civilians on October 7th. What is much, much less discussed, to the point of amnesia, is that there were very extensive attacks on Israeli military and intelligence facilities on October 7th. I would make a very clear distinction between those two. And secondly, I'm not.
So I just want to quickly say, maybe the focus is because they attacked the festival, because they kidnapped like a lot of hostages. Maybe that's why the focus is more on the civilian casualties.
But it's not just that. You see constantly with the pro-Palestinian side that even when paying lip service to condemnation of parts of the atrocities committed by Hamas while denying others, they are also actively justifying it. What Hamas has a history of preferring civilian targets always. You know, when they're not able to carry out an operation like this, they shoot rockets. When they can get into Israel like they could from the West Bank easily until 20 or so years ago, they would bomb buses. You know, they would go after civilian targets all the time. And this is what they did on October 7th. The reason they took out military facilities, this is a very, you know, he doesn't do selective condemnation. He does selective, fact mentioning. Why did they go after the military? Because the military would have prevented them from killing civilians and taking hostages. This was the reason they attacked the military there. The goal of Hamas is to kill as many Jews as possible and in the worst ways possible. And the military, again, was in their way. They got them out, and then they did what they did to the civilians. But again, nobody, unfortunately, in that debate made that point.
Yeah, well, he basically implies that what happened at the Nova Festival was by accident rather than by design, And again, Destiny again did a fairly good job of pointing out that how on earth could you really believe that? I think maybe he could have pinned him to it a bit more, but what comes across about Rabbani is basically that he thinks that the resistance is justified, right? And so then his most sinister moments were around October 7th and about justifying what happened. And you get the sense that really, if he was speaking completely unguardedly, that he would be saying that it's completely justified action all the way down.
Yeah, and I questioned the whole premise that the Palestinians have a right to resist. I don't think anyone who is in the throes of believing an authoritarian murderous ideology has a right to anything. It's the people who are defending themselves against that who have a right to resist it, not the aggressors. They have no right at all. The only thing they should be doing is surrendering and denouncing the ideology of death that they follow. And as far as laws of legitimate resistance, I don't know that laws can really be made with respect to these things, but by international bodies that have no means of enforcement and really are quite biased in their interpretations and I think in deep error in their attempt to sanitize war. To the extent that laws of legitimate resistance exist, Hamas violates them all on purpose. So if you hold to those international laws to any degree, it's Hamas that should be condemned all the time because its policy is targeting and murdering civilians. And I agree with you, Razi, the reason any military targets were taken out was to prevent communications between the civilians and the military, to prevent the military from coming out there to rescue the civilians. And many of the people in militias and civilian soldiers had to go out there and try to defend themselves. And in those cases, the Palestinian traders that had been inside in the kibbutzes at the time let the Palestinians know where the armories were, because a few years ago Israelis were prevented from, I guess legally, from carrying firearms or keeping the firearms in their homes, so they had to lock them up in central armories in the middle of their villages, which completely hobbled them in their response to this attack. The Palestinians knew it, they took advantage of it, and they murdered people who were going to those armories in an attempt to defend themselves.
Yeah, just on this point, by the way, that they accidentally came about, across the music festival. I don't know what the fuck that's supposed to mean. Like, what does that mean? They got there, and then they found out there was a music festival. They still slaughtered people. They're like, oh, music festival. Yeah, let's go drop some acid or whatever. Like, they chose to slaughter Jews. Their whole goal was to slaughter Jews. So if they came across it accidentally and said, oh, here are some Jews, let's slaughter them, they are still animals, and that is still who these two are protecting.
What I find so funny, Razi, is again the paradoxes that these people put them in, because when we call them animals and savages, we get called out as if we're dehumanizing people. But what else can you say about somebody who comes across something and can't inhibit their impulses, and they go on a murderous spree just because it happens? They happen upon something. That's the way animals are. My dog, you know, sniffs out something he likes, even if it would kill him, and he eats it. He doesn't think about the impulse, that the impulse is harmful to him. So they always talk out of both sides of their mouth and want it both ways. And it's always an attempt to infantilize the Palestinian people and make them seem like hapless victims who have no say in their fate. They do. They elected these monsters. They agree with these monsters. They celebrated what these monsters did on October 7th and 8th. And they are not surrendering now. Their children are dying as a result of them putting them in harm's way because they think the ideology and their cause is more important than the lives of their children. Get with it. They're bad.
Thank you, Mary Lynn, for the super chat. Thank you, Tom, for gifting an Ayn Rand Center UK YouTube membership. Daniel, do you have anything to say on this? And I think this is where we're going to wrap up, although I have more notes, and I'm sure the rest of you do. So maybe there should be a part two for this in a few days. And actually, Daniel, before you answer, there was something here. Ideology asked Morgan and me, if you had a week to prepare for a debate with Finkelstein, on this issue? How would you prepare, and which arguments of his could you dismantle? I would not do such a debate, so my preparation would be quite easy. Morgan, your response?
Yeah, I mean, I also wouldn't agree to do it, but if I'm engaging in the hypothetical, it isn't so much about dismantling his arguments. I think it's about pointing out the selectivity, because, like, are we there to change his mind, or are we there just to point out to the people who are there to watch him that there's something wrong with him? And the main thing that sort of comes up in this context, for example, is the selectivity. And so when he gets banging on about, oh, international law, would he be supporting international law if it weren't concurring with his point of view? If not, then let's drop the pretense, because that's all it is. It's just a pretense and a tool. And also things like when, for example, they're saying they're asked to be specific about how many people of the civilians on October 7th were killed by Hamas. They'll say, oh, a majority, but they won't be more specific than that. And if they want to say, okay, well, I don't literally know, you know, okay, that's fine. But then when they quote the Gaza Health Ministry numbers, why are they not being that suspicious and selective about those numbers, whereas they are in the other context? So I think it's just about bringing out to people the tribal mentality that's going on and the deliberate evasion. So that's probably what I would seek to do, rather and questioning the apartheid thing and the genocide that they're going to bring up and that kind of stuff. So that's probably what I would focus in on.
Daniel, final thoughts?
I'm not going to comment much on what we talked about, but one thing I definitely wanted to bring up is, and there is a, it's like right at the end, and it's the moral loading they're trying to do. And when it comes to, you know, talking about genocide, for example, you know, both of them agreed that there is no legal ruling yet. It's going to take years until there is any ruling, but they are not afraid to call it a genocide. Again, implying, you know, giving you the feeling of, let's say, the World War II genocide, like they're saying, this is what's happening now. They have no reasons for saying it, but they are trying to apply the same moral outrage. The same with apartheid, the same with open-air prison. You know, these concepts, like, again, Finkelstein, he says that the words have meaning, but whenever he uses, they are completely devoid of any meaning. And again, I think Destiny really brought it up nicely, because at some point they were discussing the Southern Jim Crow laws, and I think it was Rabbani who asked, well, is that an apartheid? And Destiny said, no, he doesn't think so. He thinks it's like a different thing. And Rabbani, instead of like challenging the point, he had like this moral outrage, like, wow, you're racist. Like, just because you don't agree with the definition or you refuse to call it, that makes you supporting of it. So if you don't call what's happening if you don't say that Israel is committing a genocide, you are genocide enabler. If you don't say Israel is an apartheid state, you're a racist. And that's where it ends. And I think that's why it's important to bring it up, because this happened right at the end. And I think it really brought up basically, you know, the kind of more something you see more on just the streets of London when it comes to pro-Palestinian supporters.
Yeah. I mean, the use of the word racist is also something we've talked about, and we'll talk about some more again. Daniel, where can people find more of your work?
Well, I have a YouTube channel, and we have in Slovakia, we have a presidential campaign coming up. So I do sometimes streams, and I usually cover Slovak politics. So I'll probably do an election night. I did the same as we had a parliamentary election a couple months ago. Slovak state is being destructed, so feel free to follow and watch it burn.
So that link is going to be in the description and maybe in the chat. Michael asks, is it in Slovak?
No, it's in English.
All right, so it is in English. Morgan, where can people find more of your work?
You can follow me on Twitter, which will be in the description, but it's at Morgan Carter 98. You can also follow or subscribe to my Substack or follow me on Medium.
And Mark?
I wanted to say something, though. I wanted to follow up with what Morgan and Daniel were saying about debating a guy like Finkelstein. And I think it's important to call him out on his inconsistencies and his selectivity and the contradictions in the things that he says. But I think you can get every argument that I see on Twitter, and even in this debate between the various sides, they all get lost in the minutiae. They all get lost in minutiae and they forget principles. And I would stick to wider principles of ethics, what makes a state legitimate, what makes actions legitimate, because on those grounds, they have nothing to stand on. They could point to, gray areas in Israeli action that they can then highlight to claim that Israel itself is a terrorist state. And I'm not even going to go there with them. I'm going to go to the wider principles that defeat their argument and never give them even one step onto the moral high ground because they don't deserve it. You can find me at Mark R. Pellegrino on X if you wanted to engage in some good vitriolic political debate. Go there. I'm Mark Ross Pelly for Instagram if you just want to see my animals and nice fuzzy things. I'm on Patreon where I'm starting to discuss the intersection of philosophy and psychology. And you can find my reality checks. The newest one on proportional responses is pinned to my profile on X. Check it out. I think it's good. We've got tons of views now for that. And I think I'm going to keep doing more reality checks on Israel. I'm taking up Razi's banner and doing it on my
And
YouTube.
yeah, make sure you check those out, especially the recent, although it's not that recent now, one on proportionality. By the way, the question, ideology directed at Morgan and myself, I think Mark should have been the person asked, because you would actually debate Norman Finkelstein if invited, right?
Well, look, I don't know that I could sit patiently across from a jackass like that. And once he started to try to tear me down because I'm an autodidact, I don't know that I can restrain myself from pulling him onto the table by his tie and choking him unconscious. He deserves it. He's certainly a despicable man, and I think anybody with a brain would applaud me for that. But he'd end up suing me and getting me in court.
Well, do it over Zoom. Just quickly, MCV says, Razi, you're watching with a delay. I can tell by the timing of the comment. Razi, that's not actually true. It was never Zionist policy to expel the Arabs. That's not what I said. I said it was integral in a sense, as they said, to Zionism. Expulsion was integral in the sense that Jews were expelled, and that was Jews were expelled from everywhere, and that's why. Or pretty much everywhere, and that's why Israel was necessary, and that's why the Zionist movement was necessary. Jesse is already offering Mark to donate money for your legal fund preemptively. Thank you, Jesse. And yeah, look, guys, we people watching, we did a bit of a bait and switch here. You came for the daily objective, you got the reality show, and then some. I think if I watched the least of this debate and I still have notes, the rest of you probably do as well. We will do probably a part two. Mark, you and I are talking about, I should remember people's names, the guy from the Oscars tomorrow. And there is a reality show extra following right afterwards for YouTube members. We have two new ones just from this show, just from this live show. Hopefully, more watch later. That is a bit lighter. And the reality show, not extra. So yeah, thanks guys. Thanks everybody for watching. Lex Fridman said at the intro that he didn't do this because he wanted views. He doesn't care about views. I care about views. So please like, comment, share, and make sure more people watch our content. And yeah, that is how we are fighting the fight. So thanks guys, and we'll see you tomorrow.